Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 in Good Amateur Practice. This SCARA server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System provided by Kilo Bravo 8, Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they have checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net controls for this session is actually, I think, several. KY6V, KC2RMO, and you, Daryl, VO1UKZ. They will all be part of the program this evening. My name is Kathy, and my call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm merely opening the program this evening. And I'm located in the city of Vero Beach, where it's currently a temperature of 64, low tonight of about 53, but my high today was 64 as well. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled. If so, please come aboard. Hearing no emergency traffic, and that's always a great thing. How about anyone celebrating a birthday, either today, this week, maybe last week, that would like to come aboard and join us this evening? So if you're having a birthday, please come aboard. All right, hearing no birthday stations as well, I know there's one of our members who's having a birthday. Her name is Charlotte. Her call sign, I know it ends with TEJ. This is Roger's wife, W4RFJ, and they're celebrating that this evening. So if they're listening there through Delco Doug, I want to wish her a happy, happy birthday. But this is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speakers or speakers. And like Gordon was saying this evening, our program is how to keep your computer clean and efficient. Want to advise all stations connected that this net is normally recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast. So if you've been part of this program tonight, you most definitely will be part of that recording. So with that, Mr. KY6V, I'm going to throw out your directions so you can begin the program this evening. And I always try to keep my computers clean and up to date and efficient, but sometimes that's not always the case. So I'm looking forward to your information this evening. KY6V, from Kilo 6 Sierra United November, the program is all yours.
Well, okay, thanks, Kathy. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gordon, KY6V, and I will be joined tonight by Gary, as Kathy has mentioned, KC2RMO up in Syracuse, New York, and Daryl, VO1UKZ, who hails from Newfoundland. And our subject for this evening is how to keep your computer clean and efficient. I started in the early days of computers with a Texas Instrument TI-99. Gary started with a light switch and a light bulb. For all of us realized that a computer is simply a device that's on and off. And if you could turn a light switch on and off at the speed of light, you would have the fastest computer in the world. Now, Daryl runs his own computer business, so between the three of us, we have worn the moccasins and walked the walk. Let me buy a nickel, please. Now, since there are many roads to Rome, some of us look at things somewhat differently. And this includes our panel for this evening. But the main point here is for you to understand what tools are available to you, how to use these tools, how to establish a regimented cleanup schedule, and in so doing, how to keep your computer running efficiently. I will start first this evening explaining how I go about things, then we'll turn it over to Gary, and then on to Daryl, and then we'll pick up the audience for questions and comments. So let's get started. First, I would recommend to each and every one of you that you do a computer cleanup at least once a week. Now, I do this sometimes two or three times a week, but it's dependent on the number of new programs that I may have downloaded, or if I see the system computer response getting a little slower than I'd like to see it, and this could be because of the size of temp files, it can be overabundance of cache entries, etc., etc. So one more nickel for the show here. My routine is simple and consistent. I perform this by the following actions. I check for updates on all of my major programs. My Skype program, as an example. My browser program. My antivirus program. My Microsoft updates, my Malwarebytes program, my CC Cleaner program, and I can see Daryl already when I said that last one. He's going to jump me on that one. And then run Malwarebytes, CCleaner, Defrag, and ScanDisk. My computer is a quad-core 64-bit machine, and it normally takes me about 10 to 12 minutes to accomplish this exercise. So at this point, let me turn it over to Gary and find out how he makes the cow eat the cabbage in Syracuse. And then if you'll turn it over to Daryl, and Daryl, you back to me, we'll get this show rolling. Mr. Syracuse from KY6V, over.
Well, thank you, sir. And as the cow said while she was munching the cabbage, that's one way to get ahead. But good evening, everybody. And, you know, Gordon's given you some good advice. I think the only thing that I would add to that is one small caveat. And this is where Gordon was talking about updating your software. It is a great idea, of course, to keep your software current. What you do want to make sure, though, is that your hardware is capable of running updated software. You know, if you have an older machine and you're putting some versions of software that are using up more resources than your machine can supply, you're going to go into the tank really quick. And if you don't, if it's not slowing down to the point of being unbearable, you're going to be getting a lot of weird problems too. So, you know, not every update is important. You know, if it's a new version that just has a lot of bells and whistles, maybe you don't need those. So take a look at what you're putting on that machine. Let me buy a nickel, and I have a couple other things to pass along too. So that's one thing, you know, is take a look at what's going on to that. Keep your versions as current as is practical, I think is probably the best way to look at that. The next thing is now I bounce between platforms. I have, as a matter of fact, I'm talking to you on a 10-year-old iMac, believe it or not, that works every bit as good as the day I got it. Actually a little better because I've upgraded the hardware on it. Next to that is a... it's a 3.4 gigahertz quad-core HP with 13 gigs of memory on it and a terabyte drive. The thing's a killer. They get along very nicely. They play nice together. And the reason why that is I've come to, over the years, develop a system that is just basically keeping it very simple. All right. One thing I like to do is instead of trying to hunt through files and what have you, I have shortcuts to everything. And to keep the confusion level down on those shortcuts, I put my shortcuts into individual folders. And that works great for the Mac and it works great for the PC. So you have a folder for South Cars, and I have a folder for items on the house, and I have, you know, items for school. All these go into their individual folders, and they all have individual shortcuts attached to them. Let me buy another nickel, The thing that you can carry through with that, too, is on your bookmarks. Now, again, whatever browser you choose, they're all a little different, but they all work the same way, too. And, for instance, I use Firefox on both the PC and the Mac. You can develop individual folders for your bookmarks, too. So I have a folder for ham radio. I have a folder for South Cars. And, again, I have folders for school and the house, etc. And in those go the individual bookmarks that that are pertinent. And that's the thing. If you can kind of carry this type of mindset through as you do your computing, you will find you're running a tighter ship and a lot more efficient ship. So we'll talk about that a little bit more as the net goes on. But we'll turn it over to Daryl right now. So this is KC2RMO. And over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Gary, and good evening to anybody that's listening this evening. This is VO1UKZ, and as Gordon said, I've been running my own business, doing computer network maintenance, you know, a variety of different information technology-related services now for a number of years, and several clients of different magnitudes and whatnot, you know, different aspects and in the information technology sector, everything from single computers to companies that run 400 systems connected to multiple servers. So my level of experience goes, you know, pretty much the whole spectrum of issues that you could potentially run into. Just to reiterate what Gordon and Gary said in regard to updating, I personally don't update software myself unless I'm having an issue of some sort. If I've got a version of a piece of software and I notice that it pops up and says there's an update available, I'll normally cancel that update unless I'm having some type of issue that the update would potentially rectify. And you're right, Gordon, absolutely. I live by the strict code to never use those registry cleaners, and CCleaner is definitely one that's not on my list of favorite programs. I have a similar regiment to both you guys. I use a lot of external storage, a lot of external hard drives and USB keys and things like that to store my data, because over the years I've noticed you can keep your computer as clean as possible, as efficient as possible, but there's nothing that can really prevent against, you know, catastrophic system failure. So one of the main things that I live by is back up your data constantly if you don't want to lose those family pictures, videos, you know, documents, things like that. Always make duplicate and triplicate copies of, you know, pertinent data and things like that. So that's pretty much my biggest tip. And, of course, the other one is, you know, a good spyware and malware removal tool. I personally use SpyBot, Search and Destroy. And that one works basically like having a computer doctor at your service 24 hours around the clock. You keep the program updated. You can set it to do it automatically once a week, once every couple of days, whatever you want. And then you do an immunization. So once you get the list of things that are out there, then you immunize your system against potential problems that are currently known by the software. And there's thousands and thousands of these things out there floating around the web that can potentially harm your system. And, you know, in addition to harming your system, they can release your personal data to third parties whose intentions with it could be, you know, less than reputable. I won't even try that word. But yeah, and then once, like you say, you get your system immunized, then you do a scan, remove anything that you could potentially have in your system, and then the immunization helps keep everything out. So with that, if you know, any of that stuff ended on as we move on this evening, I'm sure we can go ahead and do that. In the meantime, we'll pass it back to Gordon. KY6V to go, VO1UKZ.
Hey, thanks, guys. Very good. Sometime we'll have to talk in more detail about CC Cleaner, but now's not the time. Yeah, I think we're a little light on, you know, recommending the safety side here, too. You have to have a good antivirus program, and there's some good ones out there. And I'm not selling anyone particular, but you need to have that. And if you don't have one, you know, it's a very easy thing to Just let your fingers walk through the yellow pages of your search engine and get some ratings on what the big boys feel are, this is number one, this is number two, this is number three, so on and so forth. Give you a feel for the pulse. Before I open it up here, Daryl, I'm going to ask you to answer one question. Firewalls are very important also. I probably go a little bit overboard, and it might not be necessary, but I'm running Windows 7 here, and I'm using their inboard OS firewall for the computer, but it's also running into a 4G router, and the router has its firewall too. So I've got two bumps that they've got to get over before they get to me. What do you think of that process, Daryl? Over.
Well, here at my place, I use multiple systems, and quite a number of them. Tablets, computers, you know, a variety of different technology pieces. So what I find, actually, and my, like you say, years of dealing with this type of stuff, I don't like to have firewall software installed on my machines, because I find, you know, you go to certain websites, certain programs you install, things like that. Those third-party software applications, you know, that work as onboard system firewalls, they tend to block a lot of your ports and a lot of, you know, you have to be constantly allowing this, allowing that, disallowing this. You know, you get messages popping up on your screen all the time. And for users that are not so advanced, I find they tend to click yes, 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 yes on everything, assuming that if it popped up, it must be necessary by the system. So pretty much what I found good over the years is just use a hardware firewall, like you said, you have built into your router, and if you want to put a second form of protection in, just you know, put an additional router in between your high-speed internet modem and your computers, and just connect them then to the second router. Then of course you can you know, block any ports or IP addresses or particular websites or whatever you don't want to access in your system from the hardware point. That way all the systems on your network are equally protected. Back to you.
Well, that's an interesting thought that I had really never thought about, putting two routers back to back. I haven't had any particular problems, but I liked your comment about you know, just clicking yes, 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 yes. You might as well just turn on your DMZ, open up all ports, and you know, let them have at you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Gordon, KY6V, and we're talking tonight on the South Cars TIN program about how to keep your computer clean and therefore and hopefully running as efficient as it can. You've heard the opening comments. At this point, I'm going to open up for anybody in the audience that would like to say hello, any comments that you have, pro or con. Any questions that you have, and we'll just take it one at a time. So, if you'd be kind enough to just give me your suffix first, we'll get a group together, and then we'll work the group. This is KY6V. Call now.
RMO, and I have a comment to throw in there, too.
Sierra United November.
Yeah, now there's a gal that just checked in, Gary, that I happen to know cleans her computer twice a day, once in the morning, and once in the afternoon. Talk about overkill. I have RMO and SUN. Anybody else, please? All right. You know, ladies should come first, but I heard you first, Gary. So go ahead, sir. RMO, please. SUN, stand by.
And I thank you, sir. That computer of hers is not just clean, it's sanitary. It's better too much than too little. I have to a couple of things I just wanted to mention. I'm not a big fan of CC Cleaner either. I've used it, but it's gotten me into more trouble than the good it's done. And I haven't used that for a couple of years. But everybody's got their favorite programs. As far as malware protection goes. I'm a big fan of Malwarebytes, and again, they all do pretty much the same thing. So Malwarebytes has been good for me, and I've kind of stuck by that one. But I did the thing I wanted to comment on, which was Daryl most astutely had mentioned about users clicking yes, 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 yes. In the most recent years, when you download a piece of software and you take the default install, you are setting yourself up for a world of hurt. If you look at the stuff that is going to put on behind the scenes in a lot of these things that you'll download from CNET or Two Cows or whatever, you'd be amazed. Always, let me just put this in capital letters, always choose the custom install option when you download a piece of software from the internet. You will see checked as a default in there in probably 90% of installs. It wants to load some toolbar or some search engine or some stupid piece of software that is totally useless, badly programmed, and it's going to bog your computer down horrifically. And I'll give you a great case in point. I'm the IT person for family and friends around here. We have a friend who's having this will be the third time I think on that this computer's come in to me. It's going into the shop for spyware removal. Diane is like the perfect example of the person that clicks yes, 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 yes. They don't watch what they're putting on their machine, and they pay the price. So pay attention to what you're doing. I guess that's the main thing, and you'll be doing a lot better. We'll go back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Gary. That's an excellent point. I watch the downloads like a hawk. You know, there's some that are very popular on just about every download you run. Chrome browser for one, Ask for another. Trying to get some of the antivirus programs on your computer, and it goes on and on. I will only say in self-defense, we'll see what Kathy has to say about this. I've been using CC Cleaner now probably 5 or 6 years, I guess. Been very happy with it. It bit me once, but it'll never bite me again. And the trick with that is if it says that it wants to delete something out of the registry, you save that delete file. And if you run into trouble, you can go back and re-merge what they remove back into your registry. I had to do that once, and I watched that one like a hawk. I'm very cautious to back up my backup so that I can get back into the ball game with some ease. Okay, Kathy, what do you got there? K6SUN, how was your day? KY6V, over.
Well, this is Kilo 6 Sierra United November and Gordon. That wasn't a question you wanted to ask me because you now are going to hear about my day. It was pretty good until I left my second school and looked at the hood of my car and saw that it had this huge dent in it, maybe from a basketball. So that's how my day ended. But you asked about my day. But as far as my computer, yes, everyone, I clean it in the morning when I get up, and I clean it at night when I get home. And I do just what Gordon is talking about, Avest, malwares. I do a defrag that's online almost regularly, and I do the C cleaner, and I've had no problems. I think I've been using it, Gordon, as well for about 4 or 5 years. And I, too, you know, I always save it. Lately, it's been going into the cloud, and I think I ran into a problem with that. So I've, set up a special folder where it now goes into the cloud, but it's called SkyDrive Documents. But I heard Daryl talking about external. I have external drives. I always clean those as well, malwares, and I do the Avest. They have worked very well for me. I have, let's see, a one Windows machine, That's not working. I think that's a laptop at the moment, but that's probably nothing to do with cleanups. I have two Windows 8 machines, and I have an XP and another Windows 7. So I have quite a few machines that are always kept up to date. Let me pause for just a moment. So I will say, Gordon, that I think my machines are pretty clean. I've had not too much problem with my Windows 8, but I will say something about Windows 8. This has to do with Avest and a conflict it has with, and I don't think it's firewall, it could be, maybe it's Windows Defender. It will not allow you to do both. This is Windows 8. It will only allow you to do either Avest or Windows Defender, and I think Windows 7 and XP, of course, will let you do both. So that's one of the only conflicts I have. But all my machines overall are working very well, and I think it's because I clean them so much. Back to you, Gordon, and thanks for picking me up.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry to hear about the hood on your car. I hope you can get that all taken care of. I know how you try to keep things Bristol clean, like your computers, and Gary's comment of being very sanitary. I'd have to look. I don't know. I ran across that problem a while back where you couldn't run the two programs that you mentioned at the same time. I know it can be done on my XP machines. That's a problem that I'm starting to focus on now, because support is going to be going out of the picture with Microsoft here next month, guys and gals. And if you're running XP, why, you could be leaving yourself open. So I'm trying to figure out which way I need to go with that. But I'll take a look at the Windows 7 that I have here on those two programs and see if they function at the same time or not. But I know that situation exists on 8. Okay, any other questions from the audience, any comments, anything that you would like to have us go in deeper, please? If so, call now, KY6V, over.
RMO with a comment, and I'll stand by with let anybody with a comment come in first.
Sierra United November.
Okay, I have RMO, I have SUN, anybody else?
One India.
Now, that's a guy. Hi, Paul. He's like you, Gary. He talks both sides of his cheeks at the same time. He's a Mac man, and he's got some of this Microsoft stuff, too. Hi, Paul. All right, we've got RMO, SUN, One India. Anybody else, please? Okay. Gary, you're on the top. RMO, Mr. Syracuse. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, sir. I'll tell you, I'm a true Mac man. I still miss System 7. Actually, I miss System 6, but I like 7 better. Just wanted to make a comment on security software. If you have an XP machine and or a Windows 7 machine, I have found, and I'll invite comment on this because I'm sure I can get at least some feedback on it. I've been very happy with the performance of Microsoft Security Essentials. That's a free program from Microsoft, and it's actually a good program, in my opinion. It has it's on my Windows 7 machine. It's been on my XP machine. It's done a terrific job, and it doesn't cost one farthing, sir. It's been a really, really good program. Windows Defender is what's in there, and comes with Windows 8. But Security Essentials, if you don't have it for your XP machine or a Windows 7 machine, worth downloading. It's very good stuff. That was the one thing I wanted to comment on, and the other thing was it was kind of a follow up on the yes, yes, yes thing, too. If, let me just buy a nickel. If you are a person who does a lot of social networking, you're bound to pick up a lot of crud through through that too. So it becomes all the more important to find a security regimen that works for you. No matter, you know, we're talking about different software titles. You know, find one that sounds good to you, experiment with it, and, you know, and use it regularly. That's the thing. Both Daryl and myself and Gordon, and of course you've heard about Kathy's example too, we all do this regularly. We have a regimen that works for us, you know. So find something that works and then use it. That's the key, especially if you're doing a lot of social networking too, because I wanted to put that in the first set of comments. With that, we'll go back to the network. This is KC2RMO.
Thank you very much for that, Gary. I'm going to say something that I shouldn't, but, you know, I'm not always politically correct. That's why I don't use Facebook. Go ahead, Kathy, KY6V to K6SUN.
Well, thanks so much for picking me up. I wanted to make the comment, and I think you said earlier about Chrome and Bing and Ask. You know, they come up with an awful lot of times in my updates for Microsoft. For mainly Bing for the toolbar and Silverlight. You know, I know I always disable it. I don't know much about them, and I don't care to use them. I think my school machines use Bing. It's supposed to be faster, but I don't use it on my other machines. But, you know, I have this Ultrabook, which is a brand new Windows 8 that I keep up to date as well, and I've had no problems. So Windows Essential, I think, is on all of them, and it's built into it. I haven't yet used it because I've been pretty successful with what I have right now, so I'm not interested in changing. Just wanted to make that comment, and I'm listening in the background for any other comments. And hopefully those of you in the north will learn to keep those doors shut so that you keep the snow up in the north, so that us in Florida can be a little warmer than we are right now. Back to you, Gordon, and thanks once again for picking me up.
Yeah, you know, talking about Bing, you've got a great way of sliding that in. You can take it on your Microsoft updates and say, hide this, baby. I don't want to see it again. And they'll do that for a week or two, and then all of a sudden, Bing is back, and you've got to go hide it again. Life in the jungle. How nasty has it been up there, Paul? I've seen pictures of Syracuse, you know, with that 12.5 inches they've got on the ground. Did it move over to Connecticut and New England and what have you, Paul? KY6V, over.
Oh, good evening, Gordon. Good evening, Nat, and WQ1I here in Danbury, Connecticut. And no, Syracuse is, you know, that's like Siberia. It's the frozen tundra up there. But it's horrible here. It's just, we did not get snow. I went to a concert last night. When I left to go, it was warm and rainy and foggy. And when I got out, it was freezing cold. Fortunately, we didn't have any rain, any snow. But tonight, it's just brutal out there. It is 22 degrees, and the winds are, I don't know how hard they're blowing, but it's, you know, the wind chill's got to be down around 5 degrees. And it's just, you can't stand out there for very long before you're like, oh my God, this is just awful, just terrible. Bitter, bitter cold. Even though the thermometer doesn't indicate it, the wind really does it to you. But I just wanted to stop and say hi and tell you all how cold it was here, and I'm enjoying the net. And yes, I have one Windows machine here that I use mainly for this. And everything else is Mac all the way. And I've been having problems lately. Let me drop it. Just to throw it out there to the masses, for some reason I've been having difficulties with my EchoLink app on my handheld devices, the phone and the tablet, and I'm running into issues where I'm not able to connect either through the internet through the through my Wi-Fi or 3G. Something, you know, some kind of message comes out about problems with the Echolink servers. So I was having, just curious if anybody else had been experiencing that lately. But other than that, great net, and I'll be listening with interest. WQ1I, KY6E, back to net.
V1UKZ comment.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Paul. Daryl, go right ahead with your comment, sir.
I don't know if Paul has tried this one or not. I don't use that app, Echolink, on Android much anymore. I'm suspecting you may use it on iPhone. I'm not really sure, Gary. You didn't really mention what operating system. But I know in the Android version, there's when you go into the settings, there's different methods of connection. There's, you know, relay. I think one is public or open or something like that. There's a variety of different ones anyhow. And when you select relay, I think it that app on the phone, of course, it normally it tends to go through proxy servers or Echolink proxies, and it will search those automatically when you open it up. But typically, if you're having issues with it with the proxy server, just try another connection method in your settings, and that may or may not rectify the problem. I hope that helps a little bit. I'm not overly familiar with it because I don't really use it a whole lot. As you know yourself, Paul, I'm a D-Star fanatic, and speaking of which, haven't really heard you on there much lately, but I was off myself dealing with some family matters last week, but yeah, I just absolutely love D-Star. It's just the way to go, and I typically only use Echolink, actually, when I'm participating in these SouthCares programs, so back to you, Gordon, VO1UKZ.
Yeah, I've walked that walk on the Androids. I think that Paul is on a iPhone. Does that shed any light to you, Paul? Over.
Yeah. Well, you know. Thank you, Daryl, for that. And yes, I have tried all those things too. So, haven't really. Seem to be having the same issue, and it's lately. It's just within the past week, and it's odd. I even deleted the app and reloaded it to see if that could be the issue. Sometimes with apps that happens. And that didn't seem to do it either, so. And Daryl, yeah, I'm frequently on D-Star. Don't always talk, but it's on all the time here. Usually in the morning when I'm getting ready to work. I spend more time on 001 Charlie. But I pop into 6 Alpha as well, too. Definitely enjoy it. And there was a net last Sunday night that was supposed to be on 01 Charlie, that when I put it on, nothing was happening. So I don't know what's going on there either. But anyway, that's off topic. So, but thanks, Daryl. I have been playing with that, too, on the app. So I'm not quite sure what's going on here. Anyway, back to net. Thanks, Gordon.
Okay, Paul. You specifically mentioned a 3G hookup. I've heard of some problems intermittently with 4G. Does that shed any light by any chance? Over.
Well, I am running the iPhone, and it is 4G. But the only reason I switched to 4G was to see if that would work when my Wi-Fi wasn't. You know, I'm trying to narrow down what the issue is. Did something change with my internet provider? And somehow I'm getting blocked. So I went to the 4G just to get totally off of my system, and it still had the same issue. So I haven't gotten to the bottom of it yet.
All right. Well, good luck, Tucker. I'm sure that you'll get to the bottom of it. All right, this is Gordon, KY6V. This is the TIN offered once a month here on SouthCares. We're discussing computers, the ins and outs of trying to keep it clean and efficient and running the way that you want to, and talking about some things to be conscious of so that you don't get yourself into trouble and all of a sudden have a bunch of programs on your computer that you really didn't want. And I particularly enjoyed Kathy's comments about the number of computers she's got. I've got about 10. And I'd like somebody to tell me how you can keep all of those cleaned up without spending an awful lot of time. And we've already said that you should at least clean up once a week. Some people, I guess, never do that until they really get into trouble. But after I've cleaned up, this Microsoft Tuesday when they come out with bushel barrels of updates, by the time I get through with 10 computers, I'm swearing at myself. Gary, do you have any comment on that? How can we streamline this and get rid of 9 computers maybe or what? Over.
Well, Stephanie would love to see that happen. I've got a measly 5. I mean, it's like couple of things that I wanted to pass along. As far as Paul's problem went, I was curious to know if maybe he had updated something. Did he do an update to the EchoLink program or anything else, actually? Because something may have that wasn't directly related to EchoLink, maybe causing some issues there, an update in some other program. So did he do any updates within the past couple of weeks? That's number one. Number two, how do you handle multiple computers to keep them clean and happy? A lot of programs that do maintenance have the ability to do a cron job, where you can select a time, like in the middle of the night, on Tuesday morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, run this this cleaner. So you don't even have to touch it. So the main thing is just find out what you're using and see if you can schedule it. And if you can, then it's a no-brainer. You just leave your computer on, and if you're like one of those folks that that's another thing. This is great because one thing leads to another, if you're one of those folks who leaves their computer on all the time, then that thing will run, automatically and take care of business. Now, having said that, I am one of those people who does not like to leave their computer on all the time. I leave my Windows machine on all the time because it uploads to Weather Underground the data from my weather station. But given my choice, I would not leave that thing running 24/7. Let me just buy a nickel. So yeah, right. Steph just said I never leave mine on. Hers runs all the time. I mean, but my machines, I turn them off, with the exception of my Windows desktop because that feeds the weather station. But it's more secure to do that. The way that I always figure it is you can't hack into a machine that's turned off, that's a lot safer that way. Other people may have their own views on that. Obviously you can't hack into a turned off machine, but or whether it's a good idea, bad idea, just to leave them running. But I've always been that way, and I'm not about to change at this ripe old age, so what the heck. So we'll go back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Boy, I think you and I are of the same cloth. Stubborn and aged and all of that kind of stuff. No, I let my guys go 24/7. And in a lot of cases, I have set up for an automatic run in the middle of the night when I'm sound asleep. That works out pretty good. But I'm one of these crankety guys, Gary, that says, I don't want anything loaded on my computer unless I tell you to load it. Now, you can go as far as telling me what's available, but you're not going any further until I say yes. So how do you handle that in the middle of the night besides getting up? Over.
Embrace insomnia.
Embrace insomnia. Okay, I'm sorry. I think I'm seeing in the text box that I was doubling with you, Daryl. I apologize. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, no trouble at all. I was just trying to jump in between you and Gary there with a comment. I have run multiple machines here myself, and what I found is a nice speedy way to keep everything clean. Now, this may not be practical for everyone, But it is, like you say, for myself, and I do run a number of machines here as well. And what I do, basically, you know the old format and reinstall thing. I'll do a nice format and reinstall, download all my updates. I'll install all the programs that I want, make sure they're all brought up to date. Then I'll use a program. The one I use is Norton Ghost. And that one I don't think has been available for a number of years. There's a lot of these other softwares, Drive, Snapshot, you know, different types of programs. You can search out, you know, different utilities to do this online. But what I do, I have a number of USB keys, you know, 8 gig, 16 gig, whatever, you know, depending on what sizes you need for each machine. And when I get everything set up and tweaked just the way I like it, I'll make an image of the system. And then I'll make it bootable. There's some steps and stuff involved in doing that, of course. And then I'll put the image on it and have a batch file telling it, you know, when I pop this in, boot it up, restore the image back to exactly the way it is right now at this second. And once every month, every couple of months, I'll pop in all of those USB keys into all the machines and just hit some power buttons. And then before you know it, matter of, I think Ghost takes 5.5 minutes to restore 8 to 10 gigabytes. So it's pretty quick, and it's extremely efficient. And it gives you right back to everything you wanted, and not all this extra stuff or any spyware or viruses or, you know, all those things that someone using your computer might have clicked yes on. You know, it removes everything and then instantly sets it back to exactly the way it was when you liked it, when it was brand new and fresh and clean. So that's something that I do, and that may or may not be practical, like I said. But you were saying, Gordon, you're using 9 machines. That's quite a number. And you only like software that you like, and you don't want third-party stuff getting automatically installed, but we all know that tends to happen from time to time if we're not paying 100% attention. Maybe that might be a practical solution. Back to you.
Well, I thank you for that, Daryl. KY6V here with Sathgars. I'll give that some thought. Boy, I haven't played with Ghost in 7 or 8 years, and I didn't even know that it was still around. Just between us girls, I threw Ghost out the window when I threw Norton out the window. Over.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And Ghost, of course, is a Norton product. And I stopped using the Norton virus scanners and Norton System Works when they brought in that Norton 360 thing. And I'm not a fan of that because it plays around with the registry. And that goes back to, like you say, a little pet peeve I mentioned earlier about that C cleaner and RegClean and all of these other things that people think makes their system excellent. And like you say, I use an analogy anytime anybody mentions a registry cleaner. If you go and you take the time and money and everything to build your house custom just the way you want it, and you put in all these nice crown moldings and custom paint and borders and all this kind of stuff, you know, you build it just the way you want it, as Microsoft has done with Windows, which is, you know, basically Microsoft's flagship operating system. If you, you know, have a problem, let's say, with your house, like you do with your computer, you call an independent contractor to come in there, and you built the house, of course, so you know what's inside those walls. The contractor doesn't. So they've, in order to find an issue, they've got to tear apart all your nice walls and rip down your crown moldings and do everything, do a whole crap load of damage to your house, and then they can fix what's inside and then build up everything to the best of their ability to get it back looking the way you had it. And that's essentially what these registry cleaners do. They have to strip everything out and then put it back the best way they know how. And oftentimes it's not, you know, the way Microsoft did it. So that's why I don't like to invite those third-party sneaky contractors into my system, being C cleaner and whatnot. Back to you, KY6V in the group, Phil on UKZ.
Boy, oh boy, I hope we don't have any contractors listening to this tonight. They're going to be angry with us. Hey, thanks for that, Daryl. Okay, well, let's see. We're about 52 minutes into the hour and cooking along here pretty good. Some excellent comments. I think that there are some programs that I've heard out there that are probably pretty good for automatic cleanup. I might look into that and see if I can get the majority of the job done automatically in the middle of the night while I'm sleeping, and then sort of go from there. I see KW4LCB with a question mark in the text box. Hey, George, long time. You have something, sir? Over.
Well, I have a question. In KW4, Lima Charlie Bravo, a little bit back, y'all was talking about the clouds and all. Gordon, same thing with ghosts, and you know how I feel about Norton there, so seems to me this cloud is just some storage locker some place there, and you put your information there. It seems like it's a place that can be attacked, I've never tried using that. I just got bad feelings about it, but Daryl made a comment or two, that kind of struck a thought there. I buy a computer set up with Microsoft, and they automatically put a whole bunch of garbage on there I don't want. If it takes, the deletion and going into the hard drive and deleting from there and going to the registry and cleaning that out, I just don't want to see a whole bunch of other people's stuff that I don't appreciate looking at it, and it seems like the cell phones is doing that too. Google is taking over, if you take it out, then it's going to tell you this is not might work and that might not work, so I think we're just getting shoved a whole bunch of garbage down our throats that we really don't want. KW4, Charlie Bravo.
Well, some very interesting comments, George. Thank you. KY6V here, South Cars. Let me throw this back to Daryl, since he dabbles with this every day. George's comments, Microsoft's Silverlight. What is that other one that they built up as a library, Daryl? I want to say Frame 4 or 4 Frame or something like that. I mean, they're shoving an awful lot of stuff down our neck. Do you have any comments on that, and also any comments on an overview of your thoughts about cloud operation, Daryl? Over.
Yeah, QSL, yeah, Microsoft Framework. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And then the Visual C++ framework as well, and Silverlight and all those things. Basically, there are structures that were added to Windows after the fact. And I know Framework now is built into all the newer versions of Windows by default when you install it, and it's one of the updates that automatically download when you install or when you run Windows Update. That I also don't really do a whole lot of. Got to admit, I don't really run Windows Update. I like Windows typically the way it is out of the box, unless I have a problem. But those applications basically are, they're infrastructures that make other applications and other programs function properly. Function the way that they're intended to, and they add additional functionality that probably wasn't with Windows when it was originally written, that make other programs more compatible and things like that. So they're not such a bad thing. I mean, they run in the background, and a lot of the popular things people use these days, like I know a lot of people use Facebook games and all of these kind of weird things that I don't bother with at all. I do use Facebook for communication and, posting different comments about different subjects and whatnot. But, those things are not all bad. Silverlight and Microsoft Framework and Visual C++ Framework and those things. When it comes to the cloud, I do agree with George, actually, pretty much 100% on that one. It's basically an off-site storage locker that sends your data, God knows where, to a server that's God knows who has access to, and God knows who can hack into it. And, everything is getting compromised these days, from, department store computer systems to large, I know one of the big ones that I use a lot is I'm a big gamer as well, and I use PlayStation Network quite a bit. And that was even infiltrated last year or the year before, and it was shut down for, I think, a few days, a week, something like that. But there was, you know, literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people were affected by that, lost their gaming profiles and all kinds of credits and things like that that they've built up from playing these expensive games. And all of this stuff, you know, costs money for these additional add-ons and stuff like that. And a lot of people lost a lot of money and a lot of valuable data and infrastructure because of that vulnerability and that that hack. So I don't use off-site backups at all. Like I said at the beginning of the program, I use you know, external media. These I have a few 1 terabyte hard drives, a 3 terabyte, a few 32 gig flash drives and things like that, and I find those great. And if it's really, really important data and one backup is just not going to cut it, then back up that data a second time and put it in the safe at your office or something like that, you know, if you really want to make sure it's not going to be lost to fire or something like that. And that's the other big thing. You can back up as much as you want, but if you do a backup, for instance, and you lay the external hard drive right next to the computer, you lay that hard drive, that external, right next to the computer whose data is backed up on it, and then your house burns down, then, you know, God forbid, but, you know, look at reality here, that external drive and all of its data is gone right along with the computer that's sitting next to it. So do your own backups and keep one off-site. You know, that's extremely important. Or if you have your own fireproof safe, use it. And that'll usually, you know, take care of what iDrive and Google Cloud and iCloud and all those things. Actually, just before it slips out of my head, iCloud, that just clicked on something there that may help Paul. If you recently updated to iOS 7, that is a bugger for incompatibilities with a number of programs. And it automatically turns on a whole bunch of stuff that if you knew about everything, you probably wouldn't want iOS 7 anywhere near your iDevices. So perhaps look into that, and maybe that's causing your Echo Link issue. But, that pretty much covers it, I think. There was one more comment for George. About the third-party crap that comes with the new systems. If you do all of that uninstalling and deleting and all of that, like you say, and you get the computer just the way you want it, most of these brand-name systems, your Compaqs, your HPs, your, you know, all these brand-name things, come with a system recovery image creator. If you run it after you delete all of that software and garbage you don't need and create a system image, be it a backup DVD or a backup USB stick, then anytime you need to reinstall your computer, instead of using the backup image that's on your system on a hidden hard drive or on a hidden partition, use the one you created yourself after you removed all the garbage, and then that garbage won't come back when you restore your system from the image. Hope that helps a little bit. VO1UKZ.
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much, Daryl, KY6V. Did that answer some of that, George? Particularly on the cloud. And a question for you, Senor. You're running on one of your computers, and I think it's on your Dash L. You have a canned program for utility cleanup. What's the name of that, George, and are you still happy with it? Over.
Well, that's AVG1. It's a maintenance program. But, you know, I always have a sea cleaner there. So, and then I even go down to do a boot, a scan, Golden, and defrag, and make sure, you know, myself, after all these machines, all these different programs do it, I go back to the built-in Windows program and check it with there and make sure everybody's telling me the same thing before I let it go. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Yeah, okay. So this AVG, which I haven't used very much, I know it's a good program, will run a boot scan also, is that correct?
Yes, sir. It will let me know, tells me what drivers need to be updated. They do have another program with that, but I hadn't off to pay the driver for the drivers. Once it tells me what's needing done, then I go to Microsoft and do my own download.
As I recall, George, at one point, maybe you still do, that's the professional paid version of AVG, is that right?
Yes, sir. Gordon, it should expire here, I think, this past month. But like I said, I've been paying attention to what they've been doing, and once it comes up for review, I review it, and it's been a great learning tool to kind of help me to navigate through the computer to identify different areas. This way I could always come back and check different things after this program expires. So I don't think I'd, renew it because I thought it, it's have taught me quite a bit.
All right, very good. Thanks for that, George. Hope everything's going well with the family, Senor. We are now about 4 minutes into the second hour. And this is the TIN for Southgars. We're discussing computers in general. We started off pretty much hitting techniques for keeping your computer clean. And then hopefully, running efficiently. We've digressed a little bit into some other areas that I found very interesting, and I'm glad that they've come up. I have a couple of questions to ask here of you, Gary, and you, Daryl. But let me see if we have any other stations that may have just checked in that would like to come in and say hello and see if they have any comments. If so, call now, please.
Golf, Yankee Foxtrot.
I was hoping you'd make it here. Doug, stand by. Anybody besides GYF in Fort Myers?
UKZ, right quick before I forget.
All right, I'll pick you up now, Daryl. Go ahead.
Just going back to what George said about not wanting that all that garbage. Again, just before I forget, really quick, one that I actually like. You run it on a new computer, one of those brand name systems, include all that extra garbage when you first get it, or you can download it and just see for curiosity, just run it, and it does a really great job. It's called PC Decrapifier. Love the name too, and that's what got me interested in it to start with. But that runs a scan and comes up with all of that bonus extra trial 30-day test out kind of software. And then if you put checkboxes in front of all the crap you don't want, and you click Decrapify, it'll do a pretty good job of getting rid of all of that stuff there and will not fail swoop. Back to you, Gordon.
I want to quote this properly here, Daryl. PC Decrapifier? Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, sir. You did indeed. As in, decrapping the PC. just type it into Google. I'm not sure 100% on the spelling, but if I'm, like you say, wrong, it'll correct you in Google. PCDECRAPIFIER, I believe is how it's spelled. Or something relatively close to that anyway. And like you say, it's a small program. Install it, run it, and it'll scan your system for all the crap that needs decrapifying.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Thank you, Daryl. Let me send it down here to Fort Myers. And I want to say something to you, Mr. Dougson. That package that arrived today was very, very special. KA0GYF from KY6V. Over.
Yes, sir. That package was meant to mark time, and I hope it will. Lots of time. Hey, first to Kathy. My cleanup every day, I also use a ever so soft, slightly damp cotton towel with just a hint of Windex, and then my computer is really clean. Now, I love Sea Cleaner. I love Sea Cleaner so much. I think I got it before Gordon. I think I'm the one that told Gordon about it, I think. Anyway, I go to the trouble. If I'm going to erase all my cookies every night, I go to the trouble of triple wiping them so that they're really, really gone. I mean, gone. All right, now, here's my question. Finances permit, I'm ever so slowly migrating to solid-state drives. I like the Crucial brand. They have good customer support with regular firmware updates. Now, some say, many say on the internet, that defragging of a solid-state drive is not only unnecessary, but perhaps bad for the solid-state drive. Any wisdom out there so that I might take care of my Crucial solid-state drives? KA0GYF, Doug in Fort Myers, over.
Interesting question, Doug. I don't think I've heard anything on that subject of maybe the defragging was not necessary. I don't understand why that would be, but there may be an answer to that. And detrimental, I really don't know. Let me turn it to Gary. Gary, have you heard anything on this? If not, turn it over to Daryl, sir. KC2RMO from KY6V.
Well, thank you, sir. No, I have not heard anything about that. It's an interesting thought. It makes you think a little bit. Solid state, of course, has no moving parts. I would think that the, and maybe Daryl could amplify this a little bit, but with a conventional drive, of course, you're relying on an electromechanical system, and I believe that is the primary cause of any fragmentation. I mean, the way the data gets written, of course, is not in a linear fashion, but the way things get fragmented is that you're using a magnetic medium. So with a solid state drive, you probably wouldn't need it. That's my thought on it anyway. I'd like to find out a little bit more about that myself. I did want to make a quick comment on a couple of things. Let me just buy a nickel. First of all, George and his comment on the cloud is right on. Again with Daryl saying basically what I'm saying here too, avoid it like the plague. I used to work for a medical office management software company. They had software for doctor's offices, and they have things called EMRs, electronic medical records. They actually have EMRs that are based on a cloud model. Your medical records are going up on the internet? No, thank you. I don't want anybody seeing mine. And it's real easy, you know, the potential to hack into something like that is insane. So definitely these cloud things are just not a good idea. I did want to comment too on how do you manage all those updates, and Gordon, I seem to remember this from Annette a few moons ago. Steve, KV5VH, I think had made mention of this program called Nynite, which is a update manager. It kind of takes care of business for you, and you get that option that at a time of your convenience, that you can say yes, I want all this, and it just takes care of business for you, and you can walk away from it. So your involvement is minimal on that. So that's that. I'm going to throw that one out. Nynite is the name of that program, and I think that's it. I think that's it for now anyway. With that, we will turn it over to Daryl. This is KC2RMO.
And thank you very much, Gary. And, yeah, medical records in the cloud, yeah, that's just got to be a field day for hackers. I'm sure they're just lining up to look at people's prostate exam results and things like that. But you never know, man. You just never know. And when it comes to those solid-state drives, I do have quite a bit of experience with those, and I do recommend them to people who do really want that extra speed, because they are a lot faster accessing. And that has a lot to do with the way files are managed and laid out on them, and, you know, the fact that you don't need that magnetic needle. Of course, your magnetic hard drive is a disk that spins around at 7,500 RPM or 5,400 or whatever speed hard drive you have, and then that needle whips back and forth, you know, flat out. But when it comes, so of course, when on your magnetic drives, your files get written, and Windows just basically, it writes your data in the first available free space, starting from the beginning of the drive and writes outward. So if you have something, you delete it, and then something you add it, and something else you delete it, you'll have free space in between those, in between your files. And basically that's fragmentation. Your files are no longer contiguous or straight in a line, and your data gets scrambled. So on your magnetic drives, it takes longer for Windows to access, you know, files that you may not have used in a while and things like that. And with the solid-state drives, that's no longer an issue. And another thing with the solid-states, as with memory sticks and things like that, other forms of solid-state memory, you only get so many writes to those. You know, when you delete stuff and you write new stuff, those things have a shelf life and a lifespan, and they will eventually wear out. And when you run a fragmentation or a defragmentation on a solid-state drive, which again, of course, is not necessary, it really isn't, and when you do it, it basically, it simulates maybe 1,000 writes, you know, at once, because it removes, you know, a piece of data from here and then lines it up straight and removes something else and then puts it here and removes it there. So it's doing a hell of a lot of writing to that solid-state drive that, you know, and it does eat up their shelf life very, very quickly. Because it does do a lot of moving around. You know, and that's clicking through those percentages, you wouldn't believe the amount of data that's being deleted and rewritten and deleted and rewritten to that drive. So no, I'd recommend do not defragment those. And that's something actually that Windows should give you a warning if you're using a solid state drive, but unfortunately it doesn't, because it just sees it as a hard drive and that's it. So, but anyway, I can't really elaborate on that no more. Just don't do it, or you will wear out that expensive drive, because they do have a higher sticker price than your typical magnetic storage. Is that about it? I think that's about it. I can't really remember anything else that was mentioned there at the moment. Back to you, Gordon.
Well, thank you very much for that, Daryl. I've learned some good information here tonight. How about you, Doug? Did that sort of answer your solid state drive question, sir? Over.
I've heard just what Daryl said, that limited number of writes. I don't know if I'll live long enough. I wonder how long that is. I wonder if there's been an experiment with hitting defrag, trying to wear out a solid-state drive. There's the hobby. I'll look that up on the Internet. Everything is on the Internet. And I'm doing very limited cloud storage, very limited with a outfit called Mega. It's a browser-based service, Mega, at mega.nz. That guy who changed his name to .com, big guy, he's kind of a nerdy file-sharing guy in New Zealand. His name's .com. He runs this site called Mega. And what I do is I put my, files that are too big to share, or too big to email, I'll put them up there like you do with that program you used to use, Gordon, for a file sharing that mimics a little drive on your my computer. Anyway, I use Mega, and it's worked pretty good. You create a little URL with an individual password, and I can share my recently shared my bicycle movies with the Mega URL. My emails. Okay, no more defragging for me in Fort Myers on my solid-state drives. K-A-0-G-Y-F, thank you. Over.
Well, thank you, Doug. Seems to me it was just several months ago, maybe a little longer, that I was reading about Mega. I think you had sent it to me. And I sort of looked into that in some depth. This dot-com dude had to move out of the United States and he settled down in New Zealand. Am I thinking of the same guy? Over.
I think there's a few warrants, outstanding warrants for him. I don't know in what country or what residency he has. Yeah, he's running. So I'm not trusting him with a whole lot of data. Just maintaining, reserving a little place there for transfer of the occasional a movie or something I can totally lose it. And if it's compromised, it won't matter. Hey, what's the name of that drive program, cloud program that you used to use with here at South Cars? And do you still like that? Over.
Well, I'm scratching here a little bit, Doug. The only thing that I'm coming up with is Dropbox. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Your opinion of Dropbox after you've been using that 3-4 years now. KA0GYF.
Well, I've been very happy with it. It serves the purpose that South Cars needed to disseminate large files. It was introduced to us originally by Paul, your neighbor down there, FTD. He's still using it, to the best of my knowledge, extensively. You know, not only with South Cars, but for all of his school activity. Haven't had any problems with it. It's still running very nicely, Doug. Over.
Yeah, I tried it for about a week. I can't remember what it wanted to capture. I didn't feel quite secure. Don't remember what that was. I had some kind of security issue with it. Anyway, most illuminating evening tonight. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Well, you know the way that we use Dropbox with South Cars. It's a store and forwards type device. We'll put a large file that you can't really send on email. And takes less time than trying to send it through Skype. And we'll put it in somebody else's folder. Like if I have to send a large file to Paul, FTD, I'll stick it in there and he'll retrieve it, stick it on his computer, and then we delete it off of Dropbox. So it doesn't stay in the Dropbox safe very long. And it's worked out very well. Thank you very much again, Doug, and just an extremely well-received package, and we'll talk about that more tomorrow. I see that VXP has joined us and has a comment, and good evening to you, Mr. Ohio. Go ahead, sir.
This is N1TXP. Mentioned about memory sticks. This is before getting involved in Windows 8. I forget which system I was using, but I had picked up some inexpensive, small memory sticks. And, in fact, actually, I picked up one that was actually, I forget what the utility was, but I thought to myself, hey, you know, why not delete everything off of it and try to use it as a memory stick? And in the process, I did defrag it, and I was able to use it for about maybe, 10 to 15 times. And the last time I used it, I went to access the data, and it was said it was corrupted. And I'm like, uh-oh. And I had talked to a friend of mine about it, and he said the same thing. He said it would have been okay to delete all the stuff off and then use it, but when you defragged it, you changed the whole setup on the stick, and it was just for temporary use. It was okay, but nothing permanent. And then I also noticed that sometimes you get some of these, anywhere from like 8 to I picked up a few inexpensive memory sticks. Let me drop for a second. And I noticed that they do have sometimes a little utility program added onto them. That's where you got to really be careful, because sometimes they want to put that on, and they want to put a nice little toolbar added onto it, and I say, uh-uh, because I tried that one time. I went to, I said, oh, well, I'll put it on there, and then when I went to take it off, it was a devil of a time getting that utility bar off out of my system, because apparently it went in to share some of the main Windows programs, and it was really hard to get it cleaned off. I did eventually get it done, but I tend to stay away from all those utility bar, those little add-ons, as far as the anything that they want to put a utility bar up, especially like Yahoo or Google or any of those. I say, nope, I don't need it. I usually click it, check it to be no. Haven't had any problems recently. One thing I do is my updates on the, as far as Windows and HP, I have them set so that when I go to shut the computer off, I always double check the restart on the when I go to shut down. If it says update and restart, I say, oh, I got an update. So I go ahead and do it, and then I have it where if I don't do anything on the computer for a period of time, it automatically shuts off. So it's just like if I was to stay long, and let me drop one more second. You know, it's just like if I was actually to sit there and wait for it to do the update and restart and then shut down, I don't have to wait for it. I usually keep my computer turned off at night. During the day, sometimes I'll just flip the, since it is a laptop, I just put the screen down and it automatically goes into sleep mode, and haven't had any problems there at all. I do have another issue that, if we got time, I can make a real quick one. It has to do with Wi-Fi with Linksys. I think I mentioned this before about getting into an issue with with a free shout box link that's set up on one of the pages. Let me drop for a second. I've kind of listed a little list of things I did when I was checking this out. I connected to the Linksys through the Wi-Fi, entered the password, had no problems with the internet, at least I thought, connected to QRZ, and I wanted to go into WA6DKS's webpage, and that's where I found this problem with the free shout box that she has on her page. She has a trivia net, and she puts trivia questions in there, and it comes up with this little box, something about it's just checking to see who I am, verifying that I'm just not anybody trying to automatically go in there. Tells me to type in the text box, which I do, but it won't connect. It just sits there. And only does this when I'm on, like, WA6DKS's QRZ page. I've noticed a couple other websites that probably use a similar type of a box setup. Right at the same time, I thought, well, maybe it's a problem with my computer. However, I go off of the Linksys Wi-Fi setup, and I go on to my own Ethernet connection, and I don't have it. So I'm wondering if is the Wi-Fi Linksys type setup that vulnerable, kind of a problem. N1GXP, back to net control.
Well, this sounds like a subject of its own. Rick, let me ask you, when you go into Dirty Kitchen Sink's QRZ involvement, is she leading, you say a box comes up, is she and I know she's used this an awful lot. Is she leading you to a Dropbox account? Dropbox, over?
No, it's actually a page. It's right on her page. It's the another link. You have to log in with the username and password. I can't even do that. It's like this Free Shop Box has this little security link type of thing in there. Completely eliminates any kind of login. I can't even log in. But that comes up on the screen. And like I say, when I use it, or when I go to do what it says, you know, has that little box with the numbers that are kind of squiggly, and you got to figure out what the numbers are or the characters and type them in. I do that, but I go to hit the enter button and nothing. It's like it's half there, but half not working at all.
Well, I'll tell you what here, Rick. What I'll do is I've made a note, and I will, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it this evening, but I'll do it in the morning. I'll go into Susie's QRZ and see what it does for me. You say that you can work it correctly if you're Ethernet connected, but you can't do it Wi-Fi? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that seems to be the problem. I've been over on this Wi-Fi connection on several different times, and each time that shows up, I've been on other web pages that they'll have pictures added on. These are good websites. And they have a similar type of thing. So apparently it's something to do with the Linksys software. I don't know if they've got something that's just not updated and it's creating this problem.
Let me pass this to Daryl for a moment and get his input. It's starting to sound to me if it's a Wi-Fi environment type problem and Ethernet is working. It's your encryption code that you're using on Wi-Fi, possibly. Daryl, any comments on this? Over.
Yeah, QSL. Yeah, I just put in the text box that I'd give it a try at tackling this one. When it comes to different websites, third-party applications and different things that are affiliated, you said it was through QRZ and then you go somewhere, it links to something else. Sometimes different websites, when you're using Wi-Fi, sometimes it has to do with whether or not you have your Wi-Fi as an open connection, or if you're using a weak encryption, like just a real short passphrase, maybe with just a word or whatever on your Wi-Fi security. That little box comes up, you know, you type in the number and letter combination to verify that you're not a robot, is what it says. And, you know, just like a data collecting computer that, you know, wants to post random things on that site. So it's trying to verify probably that you're not one of those things. And when you're using your Wi-Fi, that's probably set up as less secure than what your actual wired connection is. Because, of course, with your wired connection, you're plugged directly into your router. So what I would recommend trying, both two different things. Under your connection settings in your control panel, under network, you know, your networking options, look at your network preferences in the Network and Sharing Center in Control Panel and see if that network is listed as a home network or if it's listed as an open network there, because sometimes even if you're using encryption on your router, depending on how you have it identified on your computer, if you list it as a home network, you're usually good to go. But if you have it listed as a public or open network on your computer, then it'll see you as one of those robots and want that verification, and those things don't always work very well. And then, like you say, the second thing is in your router settings, check your encryption level. If it's set to WEP, you know, if it's like AB2ZXK27, you know, one of those big long encryption strings, you should be good to go in that respect. But if you have WPA or WPA2 personal or enterprise enabled, then that type of encryption may not be agreeing with that website. So possibly one of those things. Other than that, it's a third-party application, and I really wouldn't know about the inner workings of it. But typically when I've ran into that stuff, it's one of those two issues. Rick, VO1UKZ.
Let me see if I got it real quick. Yeah, I just realized something. When you go to link into Linksys, they gave you an option, two different connections, and I think that's where my issue is. I'm not doing a secured, I'm doing an open, and that's where the problem is. So I think I'm going to have to try that next time, see if that eliminates the problem. And one TXP back to net control.
Okay, I think you're getting close, Rick. But as I mentioned, I've made a note here. I'll go into Susie's website and see what happens with me as well. Okay, I think Miss Sunshine had something that she wanted to add in here. Kathy, if you're still available, K6SUN from KY6V, and we are 35 minutes into the second hour.
Well, thank you so much for picking me up, Gordon. And this is going way away from what you're talking about. It's a problem I had with one of my laptops, and I think we talked about this. It's my kitty cat and her hair that gets under the keyboard. What's a simple way to maybe, without blowing it out with a vacuum cleaner, how to get that hair and how to keep that keyboard clean? My new 8s have a background around them, but they still collect some of that hair and some of that debris that I'm afraid is going to cause me a problem with my keyboard once again. And that was my problem with this laptop. I tried to get the hair out, destroyed the keys, and eventually destroyed the keyboard. So any suggestions out there that anyone could give to me? A lot of it's the kitty hair, but some of it is just, you know, general air-type debris. So maybe you can help me here, so it doesn't happen to me once again. Back to you, KY6V, from Kilo 6 Sierra, United November.
Yeah, keep the cat away from the laptop. Understand your problem. KY6V here, South Cars, TIN. First thing I will say to everybody, don't try to use a vacuum cleaner on your keyboard. It sucks up the key right off the keyboard. And trying to go through that vacuum cleaner bag and find that key so you can put it back on is a pain in the hoo. I see that Steve has joined us. Good evening, sir. Glad you could make it. Steve, would you like to answer Kathy's question if you have any thoughts? Pass it over to RMO, that's Gary. See what he's got. Gary, you pass it to Daryl, and we'll figure out how to get cat hair out of the keyboard. Steve, KY6V, over.
Good evening, Gordon. Good evening, everyone. A little bit late to the party tonight. I would recommend, other than a smaller vacuum cleaner, painter's tape. Take painter's tape, make a loop of it so that the sticky side is out, put it on the tips of your fingers, and tap it where you see cat hair. That's what I'd try. Round to you, Rick. KC2RMO, KF5VH.
Thank you, Steve. A couple of things to add to this one, and something totally unrelated, which I want to just pass along before we go. Kim.com, if you look at his picture, if he grew his hair out, he'd look just like Meatloaf. just for your reference, you know. How do you keep that cat hair out of the keyboards and out of the computer? I have a couple of members of the feline community here, and I swear by Endust for electronics. I have what do they call it? It's one of those lint-free cloths, okay? And I spray it with the Endust for electronics. It's that blue can stuff. And that works great, okay? That really does. And the key to it is just like doing maintenance on your operating system, you do maintenance on this every day or every couple of days. You know, you wipe down the keyboard, you wipe down the case to the tower, et cetera, et cetera. This stuff even cleans the screen. It's okay to use on the screen as long as you're using a scratch-free cloth. So that works very well for me, and believe me, our guys shed a lot. That's without a doubt. The other thing is, too, let me just buy a nickel, is rather than using a vacuum, use compressed air to blow the crud out of the keyboard. Okay, if you have a compressor, take the keyboard out to the garage and blow it out. That'll work. You can also buy canned air to do that too. That's a lot better than trying to vacuum it. But the end dust for electronics, compressed air, both really good ways to keep things clean and keep your computer happy, even in a multiple cat household. So with that, we'll go to Daryl. This is KC2RML.
Yeah, QSL. Yeah, I just I banged into the text box there when Kathy mentioned that. I have a member of the feline persuasion here as well, and I'm a cat person more than a dog person. A great way to get rid of it after the fact. I hadn't thought of the painter's tape. I may actually try that one myself. I don't know why that one never crossed my mind. That seems to be, it would be a real good solution, because you could get down in between the keys and just pluck those little hairy suckers right out of there. But another thing is you can get these online, different places, for different brands of computers. There's different companies that make these. They're very, very thin keyboard coverings. You know, they make it so that if you spill a Pepsi or a coffee on your keyboard, it doesn't get down between the keys and fry all the circuitry, especially with a laptop. I know a lot of customers of mine have had this issue over the years, call me up in a frantic panic. I just spilled Pepsi in the keyboard, and they tell me it was a laptop, and well, that's it. Throw your laptop out the window, because your motherboard is probably corroded beyond recognition by now. That Pepsi is not real good. But yeah, those plastic overlays may do the trick as well. That's about all I have on that one. Back to you, Gordon.
Okay. Well, some good input here, guys. I would ask of either Steve or you, Gary. I've been this route. Do you take the actual upper portion of the key off to perform this maintenance? Or do you try to sneak this stuff in around the covering of the key? Because depending on the keyboard manufacturer that you may be using, that sucker, if pardon my French, is sometimes, the cap itself is sometimes hard to get on. Either Steve or Gary, please, over.
Well, RMO here, and I'll throw it back to Steve after this. As far as what I do, I just leave things on, and it's a two-step for me. If it's really cruddy, I'll take the compressor and blow it out, and then follow up with the end dust. But for daily maintenance, it's just the lint-free rag, the scratch-free rag. I can't remember what they call that stuff, but it has a name. That rag type of material, but it leaves no microfiber. Thank you, I don't know if you could hear Steph in the background. Microfiber, this will. Leaves nothing behind. And so if you're just doing your daily maintenance, you clean up your keyboard with that, you clean up your tower with that. When it's really bad, and by depressing the keys, it'll pull any fur or anything long out of there. So that's good for that. And obviously for the tough stuff, you want to use the compressed air and blow it out with that. So that's been successful for me. Let's see what Steve has to say. So this is KC2RMO, and over to you, Steve.
Well, if Gary's cleaning his keyboard every couple of days, I'm impressed. I never clean a keyboard until you can really see what you need to get out of there. The tape on your fingers in the open area, you just tap it in between the keys. You can do it one-sided. If you look at the keyboard, there's many long straight rows there to get into. Just put the tape in, pull it out. The cat hair is long, or the hair from your head is long, it'll come right out. If you have a chiclet keyboard, I don't have any of those, but I would imagine the height of the key is so low above the deck of the keyboard, you could just lay it down flat, just mash the keys down with the tape, and it would pick it up. I've used compressed air. just make sure if you're using compressed air, you do not tip the can. You do not want the liquid that's in the can to come out the spout, because that liquid is not good for the keyboard. Back to you, Gordon, KF5VA.
Okay. Thanks, Steve, and thanks, Gary. I see VXP's got a comment, so stand by. Kathy, you've opened the Pandora's box here. I hope you're taking copious notes, and I'm going to be back to you shortly to make sure you understand everything that's been said. VXP, go ahead, Rick, KY6V, over.
This is N1VXP, and I notice on my keyboard I got to do it. I found that by using compressed air, I had a previous issue with the computer, and had to have it sent in for repair, and got a little note back, do not use compressed air. Apparently, I guess enough dust got up inside and into the computer, and I was like, okay, I can understand why they tend to use the little micro vacuum cleaner, but I was also on that same note, was given the suggestion to use a very soft bristle brush, and in fact, they even mentioned about getting a lady's makeup brush to actually sweep the stuff to the side. And as far as cleaning, yeah, the end dust for electronics, I've been told, has been really the best thing to use. Anything that can not leave any residue that could be havoc for the electronics is a great idea. I have one laptop I had sent in, and when it came back, it was funny because they had a covering over the keyboard, but it was slightly damp, and as soon as I took the covering off, it dried off and it was fine. So it was some kind of a cleaner that they put on there. It didn't bother with the electronics, but it was kind of strange. But, you know, maybe a soft bristle brush. Let me drop for a second. I use a small brush. I pretty well clean it off to the side. Being a laptop, I just flip it over, and I can actually find that, you know, this stuff does come right out. I tried a vacuum cleaner. Of course, this laptop, I should probably use that more like a little thin vinyl covering. It would fit right over. I could just tape around the edges, and it would block out the keys. Really not have any problem with the operating of the keys themselves. So, you know, it's maybe a thought of I might just cover the whole keyboard and eliminate that problem. But I found that blowing air or blowing it in, you can actually feel it get up underneath the key if it's creating a little crunching noise, and then you're like, uh-oh, it's going the wrong way. So I find that the very soft bristle brush pretty well cleans out in between the keys and have no problems. And N1VXP, back to net control.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Rick. KY6V for TIN South Car's presentation tonight. All right, Kathy. Have you been taking copious notes? Are you going to the store tomorrow? K6SUN from KY6V.
Well, this is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I didn't mean to open a wide door here, but, you know, it destroyed one of my laptops, the keyboard, because the hair got under there. And when I tried to get it, you know, the keys came off, and I needed to buy a new keyboard, and that's going to be my next question for you. And I hope I'm not tying it up for you tonight, Gordon. But, you know, when they talk about the end dust, I'd like to know where you get that. Is that at a computer store, a regular store? I know end dust in the regular store. And these keyboard coverings that I think Steve is talking about, the plastic, I've seen those, but I'm not sure where you can get those, where they actually cover the whole keyboard. So maybe you can throw that back out, and I would actually like some help with something that happened to me if I'm not tying it up too long with you. And I talked to you about this, and this has to be do with the keyboard that I destroyed, the computer I destroyed the keyboard, and maybe how it can be replaced. So I'll turn it back to you, Gordon. Maybe you can find out from those experts out there how I get the indust or the keyboard coverings. And I do have makeup brushes, so I could use those as well. Back to you, KY6V from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Oh my goodness gracious, this conversation is going cosmetic. Thank you, Kathy. KY6V here for South Cars. Okay, anybody want to pick up on her question? Where do you get indust? And where do you get the light cover plastic for the keyboard, please? Over.
Well, RMO here with the where I got my indust, okay, which was right at the supermarket, right in the cleaning section of the supermarket. They don't have Wegmans in Florida, but I don't think they have Wegmans in Florida, but if any major supermarket would take care of that. Also, I had a quick, real quick thought, you know, kind of thinking about those plastic covers, rather than that, how about one of those industrial keyboards that they use on the shop floor that have a membrane keyboard? You can't get any crud in there. So there's a thought. Back to the net, this is KC2RMO.
Oh, that's an interesting thought. So this would be a remote keyboard for a laptop type thing, you know, USB or whatever. Is that right?
Yeah, they are a regular USB keyboard that they use these in industrial environments, you know, like on a shop floor where you're going to get a lot of dirt. Or program a machine. I know our CNC machines use those when I worked in the factory. So it's, you know, you can get anything on them. It doesn't get into the keyboards because the keyboard is a membrane. You know, so you don't have a problem that way. So it's kind of indestructible stuff. You know, you can feel pretty good with that. But the other thing is too, on a laptop, it's really not hard to replace most keyboards. They're pretty straightforward. So with a little bit of care, you know, you can do it yourself. Back to the net, KC2RMO.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you about Kathy's keyboard here in just a second. And it's a problem that compounded itself. The indust, is this a spray, or do you put it on a rag and it attracts what it's trying to dislodge? Is it a liquid? Is it a powder? What is it? Over.
It's a spray. It comes in a blue can. And what I do is I have a bunch of microfiber cloths that I bought down at the dollar store. And they're excellent for cleaning things that you don't want to scratch or get streaky. And what you do is you spray this onto the microfiber cloth, and you wipe your keyboard down, and you can wipe the rest of the computer with it too. It really makes it look good. Gets rid of dust and cat hair and, you know, any other crud that finds its way on your equipment. And it works great for all electronics too. So you can clean up your transceiver with it too. I mean, it's great for cleaning up stuff around the shack, and it's great for cleaning up computers too. So a very versatile little thing. And gosh, a can will last you months and months. I've had mine for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, and I still haven't finished it all up yet. So. And again, it's available right on the cleaning aisle of your favorite supermarket. Back to the net. It's KC2RMO.
Well, I guess I've never looked for it. Gary, thank you. Next time I'm in the supermarket, I'll take a peek in that aisle. Back to her keyboard for a moment, where the keyboard doesn't work anymore. The keyboard was removed from the laptop, which was not a big task. You know, you had to do this and you had to do that like you normally do. But the umbilical cord, the actual cord from the motherboard to the keyboard itself would not come out of the socket. So it was played with and forced this way and forced that way to the point where it actually dislodged the socket on several of the pins from the motherboard itself. Do you understand where we're going with all of this? Over.
Yeah, and that stuff's SMT, and that's really ugly, and I can see the problem. I personally would not want to touch that one. I don't know. Maybe somebody else has a little bit of wisdom on that one, but my wisdom would be saying, keep the drive and throw out the rest of the machine. Back to the vet.
Well, it's working fine with an external keyboard. It's just a little bit of a pain in the hoo-hoo from what I understand. All right, anybody else out there? We are 57 minutes into the hour. We're going to be closing here in a little bit. Any other comments? And Kathy, if you would be so kind to gear yourself up to give us a quick display of what's coming up this weekend, or any announcements that you feel may be necessary, I would appreciate it. So before Kathy, any comments, any questions? Thanks for being there. KY6V, over.
VXP.
Mr. Ohio, front and center. Hi, Rick. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. I'll jump in. And Daryl, kind of double with you at the same time. As far as the keyboard cover, I think if Kathy or anybody just puts a keyboard cover under their search and then hits the images, they'll see so many types. And one kind of brings in memory. If you can get to a craft store, you can get it's nothing more than a heavy Mylar type material, and you can actually probably cut it. I wouldn't recommend using a true double stick tape because sometimes once you put it on to get it off, it does leave a pretty nasty residue and really tough to get it cleaned off. But any kind of a heavy, almost like the kind of plastic that's used on Windows as a temporary window type thing, it probably would work. But type in window screens, keyboard screens, and you'll see all the different types, how they're made, and be able to come up with a solution. Over to back to you. Remember that Daryl was in there as well. N1TXP.
Yeah, I made a note here. I apologize, Daryl. Apparently, I was a little quick on the trigger. Okay. So the answer, Kathy, is if you are looking for covers, get some ideas by letting your fingers march through the Google search or whoever you use. And I know you've got a pretty good computer store that you have used in the past, not too far from you. You might walk into there one day and say, hey, what do you got in this department, and see what they have to say. So, VO1 UXZ, or UKZ, KY6V. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, in regard to the injury that the motherboard connector has suffered, depending on how bad the damage is and if the system is really worth it to you, they can be a little difficult to fix, but not totally impossible. If you know what you're at and taking the motherboard out of the machine, which pretty much encompasses everything connected, to it, all your ports and whatnot, you got to get it out of there. And if you go in underneath the motherboard, there's probably a little, where that connector is to. There's probably a layer of metal that goes around it, like tin or whatnot. You take that off, and you can get in underneath the motherboard, and you can actually see the pinholes where those pins used to go. And if you can straighten them out, you can get them back down through those holes and just give them a little bend, to make them look like the rest of them. And that may work. other than that, you'd probably have to replace the entire motherboard, as crappy as that is. But, you know, there's a lot of damaged computers and, you know, laptops and stuff online. You could probably even pick up a motherboard and a keyboard and a whole scrapped machine that's probably only got a dead hard drive, exactly like the one you got. So if you break a screen or, you know, you're missing something else later down the road, you can probably pick up a whole replacement machine with some just some minor damage for spare parts if you really like the broken machine. And, you know, replace those things quite easily. And in regard to the keyboard covers, I want to thank ZAGG, Z-A-G-G. They make some real good screen protectors. I use one on my my ICOM radio, actually. It's the same stuff that they apparently coat airplane wings with, at some kind of Mylar-type plastic stuff. It's really, really good and very, very, you know, indestructible. You can stretch it and fit it just the way you want, and works really well. And Targus, is it Targus? I think, yeah, they make the laptop cases and whatnot. Depending on what machine you've got, I think you can order custom inlays for your keyboards from Targus. Hopefully that one helps. Back to you, Gordon.
Oh, my goodness gracious, isn't that good information? Target, you say, but just don't use your credit card. Is that right, Daryl? Over.
No, Targus, T-A-R-G-U-S. They make some of those really good laptop carrying bags and mice and some of those Kingston security locks and or Kensington security lock cables and all that kind of stuff. They make a lot of really good accessories for laptops. Targus.
Okay, I've got you now. I thought you were talking the store called Target and the way that they've just been hacked excruciously, you know, with a credit card hacker type situation. Okay, thank you, gals and guys. Any other comments here before I turn it to Kathy for announcements, please? Over.
RMO, and I have the answer.
Oh, my goodness. Which one, Gary? Go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. And the answer I am putting in the text box. It is the Logitech washable keyboard. They have a picture of somebody running this thing under a faucet and soaking it in a full sink of water, which reminded me of back of when I in one of my hardware courses, Professor Delaney said, you know, you can always clean these old keyboards up in the dishwasher. I've done that. It did work, but I think that's kind of precedent. But this is made to be washed, this keyboard. It's $25 on Amazon, and I'm giving you the URL. It'll take a licking and keep on ticking. KC2RMO, back to the net.
All right. Does this operation require a certified keyboard that can be suspended underwater by 3 feet or what?
There I go. Okay. This thing is good. I mean, you can just soak it underwater as long as you want. It's fine. But and I see Paul had put in the text box too, put it in the dishwasher. That is an old trick. I actually did. My I had a computer hardware professor that said to put them in the dishwasher. And I have done a couple of keyboards in the dishwasher. You don't want to have the heated dry on, you know. But it does work. But you know, I think you're probably pressing your luck if you do that. But this kid here, and again, the URL's in the text box. It's the Logitech K310, and it's $27 on Amazon. Is designed to be submersed and rinsed and you know, basically pounded on and no problems at all.
Well, that's neat. You know, to take this to a different level, Gary, back in the good old days when we were using crystal microphones as opposed to the dynamic and electric and so on that we use mostly today, to rejuvenize like a lollipop, you know, crystal microphone, you stuck it in the refrigerator, Gary, over.
I had heard of that. I've never done that, but I have heard of that back in the day that people would do that. I don't know what the principle behind it is, but apparently it works because I can remember some old timers talking about doing that, which is pretty cool. You know, it's funny too. Just as a total aside, but crystal mics and ceramic mics, but particularly crystal mics, are going for a premium nowadays. You know, because you know me, I'm always shopping around for old microphones. I never buy any, but I like them. You know, I love old mics. And you see these mics that were bargain basement models, you know, because crystal mics were the low end, you know. But they were like $15 back in the old days, and they're going for like $200 nowadays. It's like, holy cow, you know. So I guess nostalgia has its price, you know. KC2RMO, back to the net.
Yeah, well, you got to remember, too, they were high impedance, 50K or so. And all these radios we got today are about 600 ohms, so matching transformers and rah, rah, rah. Okay, I see LCB's back with us. George, go ahead, sir, and hello.
And hello, Six Victor, KW4M, Charlie Bravo there. Gordon, if I remember that deal I got into there, you know, that ribbon, I don't know if that ribbon has pins on the end of it or not, but either way, I think this one just has the lines. But I remember there was a schematic for that layout, and after tackling the 2000 and I think that 706, what can I say? You learn what ribbons is all about. KW4M, Charlie Bravo, but I think you can handle it.
Yeah, thanks, George. Well, in this particular case, the ribbon is solid from the keyboard. It has a socket connector on it. And the problem is that its mating socket, which is attached to the motherboard, has developed some lack of pin connections on the motherboard itself. So what really needs to be done here to do it properly is to remove the motherboard and see if those connection points can be re-soldered. And that's not a job in itself. The job in itself is getting a blooming motherboard out of a laptop. Now, I grew up as a point-to-point manufacturer. Well, I guess that's probably the wrong word. I built my own equipment. Piece of cake. Take a laptop out. I mean, you go nuts before you're halfway there. Okay, anybody else before I turn it to Kathy, please? Okay, we're going into 10 minutes into the third hour. Kathy, anything for the good of the order? KY6V, over.
Well, this is Kilo 6 Tierra, United November, and you really brought a smile to my face with all this conversation about my keyboard and my cleaning of my keyboard. But, you know, to me, it's just easier with my laptop to use an external keyboard, and I have some of those that you try to struggle with it. I still have that keyboard I bought off of eBay, but maybe I'll use it with one of the others. But let me tell everyone about our upcoming nets. This, by the way, Gordon and Daryl and Gary and anyone listening, has been a fantastic net. I've enjoyed it thoroughly. I hope that I didn't tie it up too much with my final comments. And, you know, George, who's having problems with these three puppies right now, mopping the floors, hope that that's not too much of a chore for you. But let me pause for a moment, and then let me just tell you about some of the nets coming up. All right, on Saturday, everyone, we have our usual nets, our AM, our SSIN, but I want to tell you about our Global Family Hour. It's a very special one. It's about helping South Cars, NCS's administration. Gordon and myself, Gary as the backup, will be there, and we hope that you'll join us. And Gordon, you may want to talk a little more about that if you have some thoughts. And on Sunday is St. Patrick's Day, and the celebration of it, the topic of it, and that actually starts on Monday. But those are our two programming nets. And we don't have a TIN until sometime in April. And one thing I have to say, Gordon, is next week I start my spring break. And I'll be able to enjoy some rest and relaxation and a very special day in my life. So with that, I hope that that gave you some information. I'll turn back to you. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. Back to our main net control, KY6V.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. I got distracted here a little bit. What did you want me to comment on? Was that Saturday Global's net? Which was covering South Cars or what?
Yes, Gordon, you may want to talk a little bit more about the Global Net, which is about helping South Cars, NCS administration. That's something you and I will be doing together, and Gary will be our backup. So you may want to talk a little more about that, just let everyone know what that includes. But I also want to make the comment to please look at our website. It changes on a daily basis, and all those NCSs out there listening tonight need to look at this schedule, need to confirm, and we want to encourage that. And that's one of the announcements, is NCSs are needed, administrative and hospitality people, but also those who are scheduled, please check that out and let us know. Confirm as far in advance as we can, because it is posted, I believe, Gordon, through the month of April. This year is going very, very fast. So I'll turn it back to you. If you can say anything more about Saturday evening's Global, you can, or we'll just send it out in an email when we do the mass mailing. Back to you, Gordon.
All righty. Thank you, Kathy. KY6V here for South Cars. Well, what Kathy is talking about for Saturday night, we're going to be talking about how we currently have and have been for a long time structured in this South Cars organization for the background ingredients that's needed to keep things going. And this includes a staff of people somewhere around 42 to 45, I haven't looked at it recently, are involved in all aspects to keep things going. We have our net controls that run the nets. We have our backup people that back up those net controls when those sessions are in vogue. We have administration people that are doing an awful lot of things. We have a database manager. We have a hospitality manager and staff. We have a SysOp crew that maintains the vigilance of our server to make everything hopefully run smooth and take care of any problems that may come up. From a SysOp standpoint, and on it goes. So what we're going to try to explain is a little bit of what each of these areas contain, what the responsibilities are, and then we're going to ask for help. We're going to say, hey, is there anybody out there that would like to join the group, put back some of the effort into the hobby? You know, we are a non-dues organization. We don't handle any money. Everything is free, and we intend to keep it that way. So we need help along the way in the volunteer group to make things happen. And that's what we're going to be talking about on Saturday night. Kathy, did I say that properly? Over.
Super job, Gordon. And hopefully we'll do a great session both on Saturday. And I am the NCS on Sunday, along with NXI, WA1NXI. We're going to talk about, you know, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, wearing the green, drinking that green. So you did a great job. Thank you for the session tonight. Great information, and thanks for everything you do for South Cars and for all of us there in the background. Back to you, and you can close at any time.
Thank you, Mademoiselle Net Manager. Anything from anybody for the good of the order here before we close, please? KY6V for South Cars. Okay, looks like we're closing at 18 minutes into the third hour. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on the VOIP.southcars.com website. Your net control this evening has been many. The panel that was here tonight, I'm Gordon, KY6V. We had Gary, KC2RMO up in Syracuse. We had Daryl up there in Newfoundland, VO1UKZ. And we're very pleased that Steve had a chance to join us tonight in Louisiana, and he is KF5VH. With that, good night, everybody. I'll try and get this podcast posted sometime tomorrow on our website, and we'll put it in the history archive. KY6V saying good night, and bye-bye.